Hey! Hello there, everyone.
That was cool. That was a clink of beer glasses to...
Bottles to be...
To restart the
to
podcast.
To be factually correct, we were drinking out of bottles, not cups.
Hello! Welcome back. Welcome back for us.
Yeah, we've been away for a while.
This has been a bit of a hiatus.
Yeah, a little bit. We tried podcasting with our long distance and... the internet didn't enjoy it. They just wouldn't let us do it.
They weren't big fans. We tried a bit of a Skype session to keep you guys updated, but unfortunately, Dan in Milan and me in...
Not in Milan.
London 10. That's didn't really work. So, now Dan's home. Back in business.
Back in a big smoke. Good to go.
Live from your living room. Coming in your ears once again.
Whee! Okay, so we're going to have a quick summer catch-up, see what we've missed out on. We're not going to focus on what has been, we're only going to look forwards from now on.
In case, you know, you lived in a cave, like Man City won the league, Spurs got fourth, missed out because they were cheating or something. So, yeah
cheating.
Good season all round.
It was definitely a great season, and it pains me that we couldn't actually be... talking about it weekly with you guys, because it really was fantastic. But out with the old,
back in the game. What can we say?
Yeah,
back and better than ever.
That's it.
That's fine. So Dan spent a year in Milan, becoming an expert on Italian football.
That was my main objective out there. To be fair,
I've spent a year at home, rotting and becoming more depressed and cynical. So a great combination.
That's it. No, we've got more to add. More to add. Speaking of being depressed and cynical, my club Arsenal have agreed to sell their star striker and our only striker, Robin van Persie.
Well, you mean you've got Giroud now?
Yeah, no, I mean, strictly speaking, he was our only striker until for last season. We didn't have anyone else.
Shamak?
Yeah.
Oh, you're not?
No, he doesn't.
Strictly
count.
Speaking, he doesn't count.
We've got about 8 strikers if you want to work on that principle as well. You know, under 16s.
Park Choo Young.
Yep.
Great backup option. Exactly. Yeah, so Van Persie decided, well, I mean, I guess it was sort of his decision, although there's conflicting reports. I read a report saying that he sort of changed his mind and wanted to stay, and Wenger was having none of it when he found out the amount of money he could get for him. But, you know, I mean, who knows? As far as I'm concerned, he put in basically a transfer request via his own website, and
there was no space for him to stay.
No, and I think, you know, 23 million,
22.5 million pounds worth of add-ons
to
the reports,
Man United. And in return, you've bought Cazorla, Giroud, and Podolski.
Well, Cazorla and Giroud, in essence, with that money.
With that money,
yeah. It will take a little bit, but that's not how it works.
I mean, I think, speaking as a Tottenham fan, great business.
Yeah, it's undeniably good business at this very second in time.
I think it's easy to get emotional about it, isn't it?
When, of course.
When your star player and
captain
leaves, and especially when he leaves to... A rival.
Oh, massive. Well, they're Man United are Arsenal's biggest rival, second to Tottenham.
If you took it purely as facts, then, you know, a 29-year-old with, until this season, an appalling injury record, it has to be said.
Oh, massive.
Who's got a year left on his contract and has definitely said he's not going to sign again, then to cash in for 24 million seems undeniably great business.
Oh, yeah. From that point of view, it's huge. Yeah.
It always hurts to see your star player leave.
But then you have to see how many goals he scored for you. And
but I think there was a case of last season you were so reliant on him that it sort of got bigged up how important he was to us, which last season he was. But I think even if he had stayed this season with the additions of Cazorla, Giroud, Podolski...
Oh, it would have been equaled out.
You know, definitely. He wouldn't have been as big a part, you know.
Oh, no.
So I don't think... I don't honestly don't think it'll be as big a loss to Arsenal as people seem to think.
Well, Arsenal have this seemingly every summer now.
Well, you've managed to survive losing
and
Fabregas, Nasri.
I mean, last summer to lose, in essence, our three starting midfielders at one point in time, simultaneously, two via transfer, one through injury, then have to scrape what looked to be scraping the bottom of the barrel on the last day of the transfer window at midnight, just seeing what he could get together. And we actually had a better season than we did the year before when people didn't think we had that many problems.
Well, I think it's important, isn't it? I mean, you say there that you were sort of scraping the barrel on the last day of the transfer window. This season, he knew Van Persie was going.
Yeah,
as he knew Fabregas was going, but he did something about it so early.
They had to sit down in May, and obviously things weren't going to be agreed.
He knew that was happening. It was going to happen at some point. Yeah. So rather than wait until it does happen, if you know it's going to happen, bring the players in. That's exactly what's happened. They've had the pre-season to know, you know, get settled with the system, get settled with the rest of the team. And, yeah, I think it'll benefit.
And not get forced into paying silly money. I'd hate to think how much other clubs would have asked for the players that we've signed so far, knowing, A, that we're losing him, definitely. And
of course.
B, that you've got an extra £20-plus million pound to spend.
I mean, there's been a lot of talk, obviously, about, you know, selling him to Man United. There's perhaps been seen as a lack of ambition, you know, selling him to a rival. Personally, not being an Arsenal fan, you were closer, I think this is great, you were closer to Fulham last season, points-wise, than you were to Man United at the end of the season.
There was a massive gap.
Yeah, there was a huge gap. And to me, right now, selling to one of the Manchester clubs would be better than, say, if you'd sold him to Chelsea or Spurs or Liverpool.
Yeah,
do you not agree? Or is...
Oh, yeah. In that sense, you're saying that they're so far ahead of the pack
that you realistically are not going to catch them in the next...
But Arsenal wanted to sell him abroad. I think most
Yeah, that's what I mean. But, yeah, if you are going to... That would be best. I think everyone agrees.
You wouldn't want anyone...
You don't want them to stay in the league at all.
No. But I think the RVP transfer is also a big fuck you to City from Man United.
Oh, very much so,
because they were in for him as well.
But City, apparently... You know, in a new age of austerity, refused to pay his wages. From what, you know, if you read in between the lines in Mancini's press conferences, just sort of saying, no, he's priced us out of the move. And that then tallies with...
Yeah, they do have what has been dubbed as unlimited funds, but they're not fucking idiots.
They're not idiots.
Not at the minute, anyway. And they don't have to be. They don't have to pay outrageous fees.
And there is the, you know, financial fair play coming in, as much as everyone seems to want to try and disregard it. It is going to happen. And, you know, do they really... Yeah, they're not idiots. Do they really need to... They've only got a 25-man squad. Can they really afford to go and pay Robin van Persie 200,000 a week when they've already got Aguero, Tevez, Zeko, Balotelli, Adebayor still hasn't left? You know?
Santa Cruz is still there.
It's just like, yeah, they're not idiots. From United's point of view, while it is a big fuck-off to City, personally, I find it a very odd transfer. I saw Rory Smith from The Times...
Yeah.
Compared it, and I thought this was very accurate, to almost like an old Real Madrid Galacticos transfer. As in not signing someone that you need.
Top heavy.
Just signing, top heavy, but signing just a big name, you know. Trying to sort of boost the club's reputation and boost, like, shirt sales, perhaps, rather than actually filling the hole. You know, if you looked at that Man United team, for me, where their strongest is up front. They've got, before Van Persie even comes in, they've got Berbatov, Rooney, Hernandez, Welbeck, you know, that is probably their strongest position.
Oh yeah, that's the position that doesn't need altering.
And for me, it's a very strange transfer. I think they could have spent that money more wisely elsewhere. I think it's too much money. As I said, if you looked at the facts, I mean, £24 million for a 29-year-old, undoubtedly had a great season last year, but hasn't necessarily been a consistent... Well, he has been a consistent performer, but obviously not consistent with regards to injuries.
When he's on the pitch,
yeah.
You don't know how consistently he'll be on the pitch. Yeah. That's what you're trying to get at, yes?
Yeah, of course. And, you know, 29, I mean, especially for someone with that injury record, can you really see him performing past the age of 31, 32?
I hope not. I'm going to be horribly... I'm going to be one of those fans.
Yeah. No, I
just
don't understand.
You know, I'm not saying I wish horrible injury upon him. I just want to see him not play. Or not play against...
Not play well, perhaps.
Yeah. That would be much more satisfying. But he never hasn't played well. That is the thing. And as much as everyone got on their high horses about, Arsenal have been stuck it out with him through injuries and whatnot, Arsenal are not a stupid club. They saw what potential he has. And they thought, or they knew, if we stick this out and he gets playing, he's going to be very good.
Well, one way to think of it is they stuck by him through 8 years of injuries, basically due to Wenger's philosophy and understanding. And it's Wenger's philosophy that sort of caused him to leave after he had actually one good year at the end of those eight. I mean, I think it's a bit disrespectful. I could understand sort of the anger coming from Arsenal fans after sticking by him for so long, for him to have one good season and turn around and go, right, well, fuck you then. You're not matching my ambition. You don't want to win anything. I think it's
beyond that, because
if you'd have had him fit and having that season when you still had Fabregas and Nasri, for instance,
awesome.
You probably would have won the league that year.
Things could have gone differently. But what the good thing is, are people say they're in a club and say, oh, you're not matching my ambition. But you look at all the players that have left and the players that have joined. And if you put them together, you'd have an absolutely excellent squad. It's just the fact that, okay, you can't fault Fabregas for wanting to leave.
Yeah.
I would have thought with Fabregas leaving, Nasri would have stepped up. Say stepped up, he was playing very well.
Yeah, but...
You know, he could have thought, I think I'm going to make a bigger impact. But players have egos. It's a money game at the same time. If you're working, it's a job at the end of the day. And I overlook this quite a lot. I always think footballers are purely based on the love. That's the romantic in me. I like to think that if I was a footballer and Arsenal had a big campaign earlier on last season, not to dwell on the past, about who was a fan, who was an Arsenal fan when they were younger. So they had a few of them. And Van Persie was one of those. Oh,
was that famous image of him in his bedroom with his Arsenal kit?
Yeah, and he had there was a big campaign. Yeah. He was a poster boy. And then to turn around so sharply and say... sorry, guys, I've got a couple of years left in me playing at this top flight. I'm going to take nearly £1 million a month. Because that is what he's going to be earning. And
well, this is the thing, isn't it? I mean, if you took it purely as a business perspective, you're getting paid to do a job. If someone offers you
twice as much money to do
the exact same job at a better company,
with better,
you would leave. Yeah. And perhaps that is how footballers these days see it. I mean, it is a job at the end of the day, isn't it? As much as we're also passionate about it.
There is less sentimental attachment to football.
And it is a career where really you've only got sort of...
You've got 20 years span, if 20, you're lucky,
20
right?
if you're lucky, yeah. Top money, yeah.
And that's a very small percentage of professional footballers.
Yeah.
If Van Persie stayed at Arsenal for another year, he would have had a much harder deal, A, getting what he wanted, and B, getting another club to take a punt on him on big money. Even if it was for free.
Yeah.
Being 30 years old, and who knows what will happen or what would have happened to him if he'd have stayed at Arsenal next season. If he would have had the same season again, that would have been 2.5 consistent seasons of excellence.
But then what if he hadn't, and what if he then got injured?
Exactly, if he'd have got a 4-month injury when Arsenal, as player goes out for a short amount of time, you kind of just don't see him for a while.
Yeah, he'll have twisted his ankle and been out for 6 months or thing.
Yeah, it'll be a 2-week knock and be a month.
Never ever come back.
Yeah.
I mean, sort of, for those that don't know, obviously Dan is an Arsenal fan. I'm sure you've gathered that. I'm a Spurs fan. While I don't want to sort of just dwell on our two clubs, that's not really what this is about. The two sort of biggest sagas of this transfer window probably have been regarding our two clubs. And if you've got RVP at one end, then for us it's Modric.
Yeah.
And that's still dragging on. Obviously, I'm sure everyone knows, refused to go on a pre-season tour, trying to force a move to Real Madrid, then apologised after being fined quite severely, has still not been allowed to train with the first team. Villas-Boas seems pretty set that he's definitely leaving, has said that from day one. But still, we're waiting to see what happens.
It's going to be a slow, drawn-out process. It's not.
Spurs apparently wanted 40 million. Now it's been reported sort of 23 million, which is a bit heartbreaking.
To see your best player go, it's the same situation with Arsenal. To see your best player go, the player that to the team will make arguably the biggest impact.
Yeah.
To see them go, okay, they might not be worth it to the other team, But the club that's losing them, they're irreplaceable. With that money, it's going to be very hard to get them.
With 40 million, I was like, right, okay. You know, I don't want to sell to another team in the league. I don't want to sell to Man United. I don't want to sell Chelsea or City. And I can understand perhaps taking slightly less money to sell him abroad. But to take, you know, apparently, obviously, like, none of this has been officially reported or anything. It's all rumours. But apparently to take 17 million less than we rejected last season seems like a bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest. But
not like he had a bad season. He had a he had an even better season, arguably. Than he's just getting better and better season on season.
He's leaving. It's not the sort of similar case of Van Persie where he doesn't have time left on his contract. He does have plenty of time left on his contract. So, in essence, we're not forced to sell. But when a player wants to leave that badly that they'll refuse to go on a pre-season tour, and it's not even the first season that this has happened, obviously, you know, after last year's saga, it's a case where you know that they're going to go, the other team know that they want to go, and you do get backed into a corner slightly.
Oh, yeah, the players force the club's hand. Modric has done that, Van Persie's done that, Ronaldo done that.
Yeah, and players... Rooney tried to before, you know, I think a lot of people forget that before... Yeah, well, they suddenly offered him sort of 200 plus thousand a week.
If Van Persie would have stayed at Arsenal and scored 4 goals in his first 3 games, people would not... Summer wouldn't have existed.
Yeah, they wouldn't care, of course.
Of course not.
Fickle football fans. But I think the problem is, with Van Persie, you know, Juventus were interested. Fair enough for slightly less money, but Juventus were interested, City were interested, United were interested. With Modric, not only has Levy made it clear he's not selling to another English club, Modric has made it clear that Real Madrid is sort of the only place he wants to go. PSG were apparently interested and Modric wanted nothing to do with
it. It would have been like the Fabregas situation in essence. It weakens you're selling me and you're selling me here.
Yeah.
You two agree on a price because I'm not playing for you next season. Yeah.
It weakens our bargaining position though because, you know, it's not like we can be...
You're in a corner...
It's not an auction, is it? It's basically Real Madrid.
This is it. You have to... Okay, there'll be a bartering between the two clubs, but both clubs will have their target.
Yeah. I mean...
Tottenham are always going to lose out.
I think it shows the impact. A lot of people sort of said, oh, Spurs were unlucky last year. You know, finished fourth. Chelsea won the Champions League. Right? Such a freak result to happen. But we didn't have to be fourth.
No. There's something
we could very easily have finished third with, you know... Just silly little things, which I won't go into now, as won't dwell on last season, but I'll just say I'm a very happy man that Harry Redknapp's gone. But this then shows the problem is that we were interested in Oscar and have a sort of a semi-link with Internacional, but he decided to go to Chelsea because A, they have more money, but B, they have Champions League football.
Champions League's a nice statement. Yeah, of course. I think that spoke in leaps and bounds when... Hazard played his whole... I mean, I don't know the way that was dealt with by himself, but it goes to show you that Chelsea, okay, in recent years are considered a big team, but the fact that they've gone and won the Champions League speaks volumes, and he'd rather join them than Man City or Manchester United, which to me...
But we were supposedly in for Hazard as well, and then as soon as, you know... There's so many players who we were in for, and even though we finished fourth, the fact that we don't have Champions League football next year... Whether that's the fact of having Champions League football or whether that's the fact of being without the Champions League television money for 2 years now...
It's a bit of both.
...is we can't pay 20-odd million for Oscar.
And the wage and whatever.
And we're trying to get Dami out. And really, I think, you know, Internacional would sell and he probably would come, but it's do we have the money to do it?
And the other question is if Dami out is for sale... Tottenham surely won't be the only club in there.
Course,
and you might be outpriced again, or you might be out, I don't want to say outdone on quality. I don't want to say the quality of the team, but the competitions that you're competing in.
I mean, look at Llorente has come out and said he's, you know, he's definitely not signing a new contract. Mm. I'd love Spurs to go in for him. But at the same time, I'm pretty sure Juve are going in for him. And there's rumours that Arsenal are going in for him.
I don't know about Arsenal. I know Juventus are very, very much keen on him.
Do we really have, you know... Do we really have the funds or, as you say, the competition strength to... You know, does he really want to play in the Europa League again next season when he can play in the Champions League?
How enticing are you as a club to a player without being able to offer us? It's the same with Arsenal. As much as I was saying, oh, the big names shouldn't leave, if you can't keep your big names... for whatever reason it may be.
Yeah.
Because Arsenal are selling Alex Song as well.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to sort of touch on that and later on with...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they are, from what I understand...
He's going, yeah.
He's off. And for money, once again, that I think we...
And is a replacement going to be brought in for him, or is that just going to be covered?
People are talking about replacements, yes, but...
I know Villa was sort of touted early in the window, but that seems to have died down.
No, there are replacements being lined up, but I think Wenger's quite... As always, he's quietly confident in his youth players, and we do have Coquelin, and he's a decent footballer. He's not Alex Song, and he's not.
A lot of people who know what they're talking about would say that Alex Song was probably Arsenal's most underrated player in last season, maybe second behind Van Persie.
He was massively important. But once again, last season Song had a freak season in the sense that he stood out to people because he was assisting all these goals. The two seasons two seasons prior, three assists over two seasons. You know, his role was always a sweeper in midfield, just pick up.
Whereas he sort of pushed on a bit more.
Yeah,
with Arteta,
we played a much more attacking game. We didn't have a defensive midfielder. We had, Song's robust, he tackles a lot.
Yeah.
But he was very much given free rein of the park, the middle of the park. And when he can play a ball in from deep, like the ones you saw across diagonal, which almost became a trademark, the amount of times I got played and wasn't converted was also silly.
But then the sort of two times
the
it did.
The two times it did, which is absolutely magic.
Was,
and Liverpool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think just to sum up the Modric thing, personally, I don't feel any bad blood towards Modric. I know there's sort of a lot of very passionate fans out there who, as same as Arsenal with Van Persie, will, you know, have so much anger towards him for wanting to leave. Modric is the best player I've ever seen play, like with my own eyes, sort of thing. You know, for two seasons now, he's just been a class above anyone else in the Spurs team, you know, including Gareth Bale.
It must be frustrating.
It's frustrating.
If you're that good, to look around. I remember when I used to watch Thierry Henry when I was younger at the stadium, just every time someone would make
this, a mistake,
the glare that Henry would give would be like the head teacher just giving you, you know, assembly, you're getting inspected by Ofsted, and you've just come in with no tie and white trainers on, and that look, that is the look that Thierry Henry would give you, like, you piece of shit.
So, I mean, I don't feel any bad blood towards him. Let's be honest. Spurs, as much as they're talked up, when push came to shove, we didn't challenge for the league last year. You know, we had chances, and if we had pushed on from Christmas time, we could have, but we didn't. And we don't have the money currently to offer him, you know, 100,000 a week. So I don't feel sort of bad blood towards him going. My only concern is that we get our money's worth for him. And to me, that's sort of north of £30 million. One, you know, maybe slight question behind this £23 million, even before you think of add-ons, is where the leak has come from, where they found this figure from. Because it would not shock me in any way to find that it came from Spurs. Because how much weaker is your bargaining position when teams know you've got £35 million to spend rather than £23 million to spend?
Oh, yeah, and the whole agreement, the prior agreement saying Modric is... the day Modric will sign the contract around Real Madrid will be the day that Tottenham have agreed a fee for
a replacement. Exactly. And if we are after Moutinho, which has obviously been talked about a lot, if they think that we're only getting £23 million for Modric, we might be able to get him for less money.
Levy being as shrewd as ever.
I mean, yeah, he's a very shrewd man, as has been proven in the past. I mean, another way to look at it is, yeah, we might have been offered £40 million for Modric last season, but if we'd accepted it, Harry Redknapp would have been given that £40 million, and no one ever wants that to happen.
No, he made those really good signings in January that helped you push on and, like, cement that place competing for the league.
The worst part was when he was like, obviously before he got sacked, was like, yeah, we've definitely got to make sure we keep Ryan Nelson around next year because he's just been such a morale boost for the boys. And it's just, what the fuck are you talking about? Ryan fucking Nelson. get him as far away from the Spurs squad as possible. Wow. Jesus Christ, like, watch my dad play football. Right, so that's the depressing part done.
Yeah.
RVP's leaving, or left, Modric is leaving. We can, you know, cry into our half-time pies about it.
That's it. Battling out for mid-table now.
Oh, yeah, for sure, yeah. I fully suspect Spurs to fall back to, like, their standard old position of eighth from now on.
Tottenham were
Gareth
eighth,
Bale will be off in January.
When's he going to go to?
Barca.
Why not? Fuck Messi.
Yeah.
Got Gareth Bale. Right, so if we think our teams may come in mid-table, what do you reckon? What do you reckon the top four is going to be? And if you want to give an order placement, you can. If not...
Yeah. I mean, last season I called City to win it. I said it would be very close. I mean, I didn't expect it to go as close as it was. So,
goal difference.
Goal difference in the final minute.
Imagine if he lost the league on yellow cards.
Yeah, that would be a bit pain in the ass.
Fucking Paul Scholes. God
damn. And to be honest, although they haven't bought anyone else, and other teams have spent a lot of money, and like that's not beat around the bush, some of the teams have been spending a lot, I still think City are the strongest. I think there's a lot of focus put on their attack, but there's more to it than that. If you look through the team, like the spine of the team...
You can't get...
You've got, you know...
They are a
You've got your forwards, you've got Silva sitting in behind, you've got Yaya Toure sitting in behind that, you've got Milner, who's hugely underrated, I think, in that midfield. Kompany, Lescott, who had a great season last season, yeah, really, you know, went really unnoticed. And then Joe Hart, who's without doubt the best keeper in the league. And there's so many positions where you think, yeah, they're the best player in the league in that position.
Yeah.
And that's the scary thing. And really, they haven't bought anyone, but they've had another season to gel as a team. And I can't see them doing anything but get better. So it's up to the other teams to catch them. So they're for me first.
Okay.
Second, I've been wrestling with this. I've been thinking for about 4 years that it's going to be the season when Man United finally crumble. And as I say, they've went out and they've spent money. And Kagawa, I think, is an absolute steal for 12 million.
Yeah, definitely.
But again, I mean, I'm really not sure if that's the position they need strengthening. I mean, if you looked at that team, they need cover at fullback.
They've got two big players. They've spent over £35 million on two players.
Yeah.
And they don't need them.
No.
And it's not like they don't need anyone.
Man United need cover at fullbacks, or just new fullbacks, and they need central midfielders. You know, Carrick and Cleverley. Cleverley obviously missed out most of last season with injury. Carrick and Cleverley played for England the night before last. Was it last
night?
Last night, sorry. And they look good. You know, they did look good. But they're very similar footballers, I think. Obviously, Cleverley a bit more mobile. And they're very good footballers. I'm not slagging them off. But to me, they're too similar. And there's no sort of strength or bite in the middle of the park for them there. And whether it's a case of, we're Man United, we're just going to go and score more goals than you because we've got Van Persie and Rooney and Hernandez and blah, blah, blah. Perhaps, but I don't know. I'm struggling to think whether this will be the season that they finally come undone. But I'm going to say no. And I'm going to say they'll get second. But I think they'll be further behind City. And I think third and fourth will be a lot closer to them this season. In third, Chelsea. Again, spent a lot of money. Abramovich gone on a spending spree. And again, I think probably not in the wrong places, but too much in the same places. You know, they've got Marinin for 7 million, which was a great deal, but where's he going to play? Because you've got Mata there, you've got Hazard there, you've got Oscar there.
Lampard.
Yeah, yeah. Mateo loves Lampard.
It's not just of who they've brought in, it's... That's probably one of the positions. I know Lampard can't last forever, but he is consistent. Yeah. Hit you 15 to 20 Premier League goals the season for 10 years. And that is truly an invaluable asset to have.
Of course, you know, but I think they'll do well just because of the sheer talent they've brought in, really. But I think anyone who thinks Di Matteo had really anything to do with them winning the Champions League last year, needs their head looked at.
It's debatable, wasn't it?
It's a case of, oh right, Villas-Boas has gone, you know, the reins are off. Let's put old John Old Racist John in charge of the team.
Old Racist John, make it sound like a caretaker.
And I really think, you know, Di Matteo, I mean, he wasn't good at West Brom. He's a lovely guy, don't get me wrong, but he wasn't good at West Brom, and I didn't particularly see what he was doing at Chelsea, apart from, oh, we'll just pick the old boys and let it run itself. You know, Drogba's left. I think Di Matteo could get found out, and it wouldn't surprise me if he doesn't last the season. But at the same time...
But why don't you just stick to what has been working? If this... Chelsea have had a very poor pre-season.
Yeah, but then I think you're sort of underestimating like the new boys coming in. You know, they've brought in a lot of new boys, you know, with big egos to go alongside a squad that's filled with pretty big egos.
I don't think Di Matteo's going to be able to handle
and trying to just go, oh...
The best thing for Zard's career would have been to have gone to Manchester United.
Yeah, and Ferguson.
Because there are very few managers in the world, let alone in the Premier League, that can handle someone that's clearly just an egomaniac.
Yeah, you know, and instead he's, it's like, oh, we've lost Drogba, oh, we better get someone with an even bigger ego in. You know, and yeah, they have somehow managed to hold it together with Ashley Cole, John Terry, Didier Drogba, all in the same team, and Nicolas Anelka, of course. But I think Di Matteo will get found out, but then I think a very similar thing could happen. They always finish strongly, Chelsea, and with the talent they've got there, when it does finally start to gel, which I'm sure it will at some point going forward, if not perhaps defensively, then I think they could still get third. As I say, I think it will be so tight again.
So you've got City winning, United and Chelsea technically battling for third.
Yeah, and currently, as things stand at this very hour of this podcast being recorded, I would put Arsenal in fourth place.
That's fair enough.
If you took the squads as it is right now, I can't see how you can argue, even me, as an ardent Spurs fan, how you can argue that we've got the squad strength to finish in the top four when Jermaine Defoe is our only senior striker.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the fact, is we have one senior striker. And Defoe should probably stay, you know, he's got a lot of weaknesses, but he has improved his game, which a lot of people don't give him credit for in sort of the past two seasons. He's added a lot to it. But, you know, the season kicks off in 2 days' time, and we still haven't signed a striker. And Modric is... Even if we kept Modric now, I don't see how you can go through a season with just Jermaine Defoe as your only striker and expect to finish in the top four. And I'm not saying I don't expect us to do business. I do. I know we will bring someone in, if not two strikers at least. Maybe a new goalkeeper. Modric will probably go, probably a replacement in for him. Unless Sigurdsson is that replacement. I mean, that's yet to be seen, but... If I took it at the very present time, there's no way I could argue that Spurs have a squad capable of challenging for the top four.
I agree. I certainly agree.
You know, if you'd have asked me sort of 3 weeks ago, I couldn't have been more positive about Spurs. AVB was my first choice for who I wanted to replace Redknapp. He is basically the anti-Harry Redknapp, which makes me love him. You know,
he's one
of the sexiest managers in the world, which obviously makes me love him. Such great hair.
Bringing in a very good centre-back to...
Yeah, and then we brought in Vertonghen, who was right at the top of my list of preferred targets. Sigurdsson, who I really didn't expect us to get, and, you know, was so shocked and very happy about bringing him in for £12 million as well, for a 22-year-old, who's already proved it in the Premiership at Swansea, and obviously has played in England quite a lot because he came through Reading's academy. I was, you know, over the moon, and I thought, right, Adebayor will get done, Modric will leave, fair enough, we'll bring in a replacement, bring in another striker alongside Adebayor, all is rosy. And I still think if we do, within the next sort of week or so, get rid of Modric, bring in a replacement, bring in Adebayor maybe finally, which I don't think is our fault. I think
it's going to take a while for it to all finally put it all into a pot, stir it up till it makes something good.
It will take, you know,
at the middle of October.
Yeah. Which happened last season, because this is the problem with Levy. Although he's fantastic at getting a deal, he seems to do it while sacrificing the squad playing together.
But that is how deals are made, is when you've got very little time. That is why Van Persie probably got pushed through.
Of course, yeah.
You know, if he hasn't signed by tomorrow at midday, he can't play on Monday against Everton. Yeah. So they think, oh, look, we're going to want him in. Boom, get him in. What do you want to pay? What are we going to have to pay for him? you're gonna have to pay.
So I think my views on the top four could be very different come deadline day, or the day after deadline day. Probably it'll probably be 10 to midnight on deadline day that we actually sign anyone. But
so
at the moment,
Cristiano Ronaldo, 42.
At the moment, you know, with one striker in your squad, I can't see how you think you could challenge for the top four. Yeah, how about you? How do you see the top four going this year?
I find it very hard to argue with the top four that you've... I mean, you'd have to really be, I think, an idiot to try and even suggest that anyone else has, apart from Tottenham, have been threatening to... did actually break into the dubbed top four. You've only got Liverpool and Newcastle had the stint last season, obviously, but order-wise, I can't look beyond Manchester City. I think they haven't bought anyone. I think they're going to try and sign one player.
A big name? Or
I think
just
they're
going to
try and sign De Rossi.
Okay.
And
I mean, they were quoted as, what, 100 million they wanted for him? Which is basically saying he's not for sale, isn't it?
I don't even know if De Rossi would leave. De Rossi is to Roma
what Totti was before him.
I was going to try and give an English...
Ledley King perhaps is to...
I was going to say more John Terry, just without being an absolute despicable
Steven
human.
Gerrard, perhaps.
Yeah, Gerrard's a great example. He's had the offers to go, and Roma are certainly not the biggest club in Italy, as Liverpool, as much as their fans would like to argue, aren't the biggest team in England and haven't been for about 30 years.
Yeah.
So, sorry to break it to Liverpool fans, but yeah, having Steven Gerrard is a blessing. The fact he hasn't left or never left was huge.
Yeah.
And the only thing tying De Rossi in to Roma is the fact that it's Roma. The fact he's Roman born, he is now club captain, he is at the place where he loves. And they've got... I think they're going to have a good season, but if push comes to shove, Roma, A, might sell, or money may lure him. But that's who I understand.
But do you think he's more likely... He would be more likely to leave to join Man City than he would... He's obviously not going to leave to join another Italian club.
No, he would never do that. If he goes anywhere, that is where he's going.
Okay. And you think, walk straight into the City team, De Rossi?
Yeah.
I mean, from what I've seen, I would say that. I think he's a fantastic player, but I haven't watched him week in, week out.
The money that they are... allegedly, what they'd have to pay for him.
They would have to start him.
It implies that as much money, like we were saying, as they've got, they're not knocking out £40 million for a squad player.
Yeah, of course.
Just bar up front. You know.
But, I mean, you'd argue that the position he's walking...
Nigel de Jong's meant to be leaving.
Yeah, and the position he plays probably, if you had to pick a weakness in City squad, to me, de Jong, Gareth Barry...
I like De Jong, I do, and I think Barry does his job. And
but
I think
De Rossi is a better player than both of them. 100%,
yeah. His ability is all-round. He might be the best all-round footballer that I can think of at the top of my head. I'm trying to think. I'm probably wrong here. And there are loads, don't get me wrong,
course,
you know.
Yeah. But he sort of does have it all, doesn't he?
At least
he can
in
play
Italy,
centre-back.
In Italy, he is... Yeah,
he has played centre back for Italy, like at the Euros.
He's played it for Roma.
But also can push on. He can start an attack.
He's got good feet. He's got a good head. Not aerially. I mean, mentally.
Yeah.
He's mentally set. He's got a streak to him, but I think that's partly to his position. He is.
I think he's over that in a sense.
He's not young and reckless, but he is not a soft tackler by any stretch of the imagination.
I mean, Gattuso kept hacking down players till the day.
I think he's a man that will walk down the street and just kick someone in the leg. But yeah, if City signed De Rossi, which would probably be one of the only signings that they would make, he'd undoubtedly strengthen their team. But like you were saying earlier, they haven't signed anyone. I think mainly because they don't need to.
Yeah.
Well, who would you replace?
Yeah. I mean,
that is the long and short of it. If you've got the best players in the league, and
arguably the best players in the world.
I was just about to say, if the Premier League is meant to be the best league in the world, okay, there's probably a few players.
Real Madrid and Barcelona taken away. You know. There's very few players from other teams that you'd bring in, really.
What Barcelona player would you see leaving?
No, no, I'm not saying they'd leave.
Well. No, no, but yeah, that's my point as well.
They couldn't.
In theory, yeah, of course you'd put Barcelona's midfield in there.
Yeah,
but they're not going to leave. So, City for first. I think Chelsea, if they get their act together, i.e. if they gel.
I mean, they have, as you hinted to, had an awful pre-season.
They have had a very bad pre-season. I've been covering them quite closely.
They got beaten by Brighton, is that?
Brighton, yeah, they lost 3-1 to Brighton. But they had a tour of the US, as a couple of teams have, and obviously he's a commercial run out there.
Last time Spurs had an unbeaten run, we've had an unbeaten pre-season run this year.
That's when you had...
And before we played Valencia, last time we had that.
It was when Darren Bent was he on fire that pre-season. And...
It was the season that one day Ramos...
Then he got the worst start.
So, I mean, I wouldn't read that much into pre-season, but...
Oh, no, I don't think you can read into pre-season, because everyone kind of goes in...
Players don't take it that seriously, I don't think.
It's
not worth getting injured, is it?
It's for fitness.
Yeah.
And that is what pre-season is there for. You just imagine that, for example, Arsenal lost to Malaysia 11. Fit or not fit, you'd imagine you'd put a set of unfit reserve players out there and they should, in theory, beat them. They didn't.
Yeah.
You know, it was an excellent goal.
It doesn't really matter at the end of the day, does it? Pre-season.
On that Asian tour, we played Man City.
Yeah.
Nothing was made of it, but we did lose.
So you think Chelsea will get their act together then? You're just tipping them for second?
Yes, but only because I think... Well, probably not. Realistically, I'd agree with you. With the exact position that you've gone for, but I just don't want to, because it would just be boring. It would be too easy just to say, I agree with you, because I don't think what you're saying is wrong. I think Man United, for years I've been saying they haven't had a good team, but for years they've been winning.
Yeah.
So that, you know, someone will turn around and say, the proof is in the pudding.
Yeah.
Oh, your team's not that good. Well, they're better than yours. And be like, well, yeah, that's not what I'm saying. But the fact that they've gone and won the league, I can't argue with it.
They finished above, you know,
yeah,
18 teams. So.
Yeah, and albeit Manchester City, in my eyes, are a much better team, they got taken down to the last minute of the season.
And that probably shows, you know, Fergie's strength for all, like, I know you've been slagged off a lot this summer for how he sort of treated the fans and how he deals with the Glazers, but it does show his strength, because I'm sorry, anyone that thinks Ryan Giggs is still turning in good performances week in, week out, needs their eyes checked. I honestly don't know how he's playing, but, you know, they're still getting the results. And Paul Scholes to bring like a 38-year-old in.
Do you know how many league appearances Scholes and Giggs had between them last season? Bearing in mind Scholes had half a season, 42.
It's
42 between them. Scholes played 17 games, 17 league games. The reliance on someone that old and not that good. More than anything, you know, age is just a number at the end of the day. But Scholes, he is past his best years by a long way.
Yeah, and I think, I would argue Giggs are even worse than that. I mean, I think from what I saw of Scholes last year, and I'll be honest, I try not to watch Man United too often. He sort of did a job, in a sense that obviously he's not mobile anymore, but he can still pick a pass. As I imagine, say, someone like Modric would still be doing when he's 40. Might not be able to move, could still mentally see a pass before anyone else.
But
to me, Giggs, I think he's just an absolute passenger in the games I have seen. You know, passing directly to opposition players quite regularly and just trying to do things that clearly his body just can't do anymore.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I honestly don't know how they finish where they do. You know,
That is purely down to the manager. I honestly believe you take 20 of their players, put them in another jersey with another manager, they would be fighting for fourth.
Yeah.
In my eyes, they've got one great striker, great at times when Rooney's, at times, especially in the Premier League.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's got a tendency to be erratic, and for anyone who talks about him on Messi and Ronaldo's level is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But yeah, one sort of great, outstanding player.
Their biggest asset is their manager.
Yeah.
And the fact that they don't lose those games. You say those games in a sense that you see other teams throwing them away.
And do you think perhaps you could argue the same about Arsenal then, perhaps?
That they've changed.
That despite, you know, you losing players,
oh, yeah, massively,
you know,
Vieira,
Henry, yeah, over
that
and
entire
over,
team, you know?
And he's kept you in the Champions League for however many 15 seasons.
15 years on advance, you know. It's...
To do that, I mean, he's your biggest
second. Massively. But at the same time, I don't know whether it's the crop of players, I don't know whether it's the manager. I back Wenger. I'd blindly back Wenger. So if he has signed players out of the blue, even in recent years, you know, Laurent Koscielny came into the team having previously played no real
level.
Yeah. You know, he just got into the top French league.
Yeah.
And then Arsenal go pick him up for £10 million, which is not a small fee for
someone of, you know, playing at that level. Yeah.
You know, bearing in mind we signed Podolski for not more than that, and he has 100 caps for Germany. It's insane. And now he's proved to be probably Arsenal's best defender.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, I was sceptical of him. I hated Alex Song when he was a youngster, when he was at Charlton. I just thought he was one of those that got signed.
Because of his size. And...
He was never a small kid.
Yeah.
But I just thought he's talentless. And then he's only 24 years old. And Charlton being in the Premier League was many, many moons ago. Yeah. But, you know, he sees stuff and knows stuff that nobody else does. Yeah, it's a huge asset to the team. Huge asset. And people like to make fun of Arsene Wenger losing his shit on the touchline and whatnot, but I would as well. He knows how talented his players are, and if they're not turning results, you're thinking, what are you doing? We do this in training every day. Why is this happening and why is that happening? But anyway, that is so beside the point. I think he's going to be top four. He's going to be City, United, Chelsea, Arsenal at this very moment in time, like you're saying. If Tottenham can't bring anyone in or anyone of value in,
if Tottenham sort their shit out, then it might change. But
it might change. But Arsenal have put themselves; they put their best foot forward.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And
that's my worry as a Spurs fan is that, you know, the three teams, well, sort of the two teams above us and the one team below us last year went out and spent money.
It's a money game, isn't
you know.
It?
And at the end of the day, yeah, we've bought Vertonghen and Sigurdsson. We haven't not spent any money.
No, but you spent £20 million.
And we know that we're losing Modric. And really, where we needed to sign someone
was
up front.
So you'd break even. If nothing happened right now, you'd break even. Which, yeah, you can't get away with it. You just can't. No. But anyway, that will be my top four as it stands. Underachiever of the season?
Liverpool for me.
You don't reckon they're going to have a bad season?
For me?
Compared to what, last season or compared to...
No, not compared to last season. I mean, I can see them doing the same again, but I think there's a lot of optimism placed around Brendan Rodgers. And, you know, he was spoken of as a candidate for Spurs when Redknapp was rumoured to be leaving. Obviously, they got the Liverpool job. I never wanted him. You know, they say experience isn't, you know, everything, and you can look at Villas Boas and go, well, he's had, you know, 1 year at Porto, 1 year at Chelsea. But that's experience at the top level for me, which Rodgers doesn't have. And secondly, there was so much about his team last year, you know, the Welsh Barcelona, blah, blah, blah. They were playing great football. I'm not going to hold that against them or, you know, deny that in any way. But for me, he was benefiting from a system that had been put in place
by Swansea for several years.
That was, you know, Martinez was there before him, Souse was there before him. Several managers had with similar philosophies been brought in, which, you know,
implemented.
A credit to the chairman. But it was as if, you know, Rodgers was just sort of reaping the benefits of what had been put in place before.
He just rolled in and he took the plaudits massively for it. And Martinez has been seen as this crappy manager that's playing at Wigan. Mm. Okay, they had that excellent run of form at the back end of the season, but...
But, I mean... I think, you know, managing Liverpool is a completely different beast. And
The Liverpool fans are so... Getting them on your side is three quarters of the battle.
Yeah. And, you know, he hasn't... There's been a lot made. He's gone out and bought Joe Allen, who could turn out to be a fantastic footballer. for me, he's not at that level yet. And £15 million is a lot of money. It's also very easy to argue, well, he's 22 years old. If you get 10 years out of him, then £15 million seems like nothing. You know, if people are paying £24 million for a 29-year-old, then paying £15 million for a 22-year-old, even if he's not as good, isn't necessarily that bad. But for me, I don't know. I think too much faith has been put in Brendan Rodgers.
Blind faith, you'd say, or just general?
Not completely blind. I mean, I don't think he's incompetent in any way, and I sort of like the way he tries to play football. But I think, you know, Swansea, new to the league, their fans were sort of happy for when they were at home to try and keep the ball, you know, slowly, you know, wear down opposition and take a chance when it comes. Can you see the Kop being happy with Liverpool playing keep ball in their own half at Anfield?
And Liverpool play keep ball in their own half
for 60 minutes. I mean, I just don't see it happening. And the pressure gets too much. You know, at some point something's got to break. And I think it could be his philosophy. And suddenly it goes back to, oh, we better just get Stevie Gerrard on then and nick us a goal with his Roy the Rovers Hollywood pass bullshit, which is just outdated to me. And I don't know. I mean, I can't see them doing necessarily worse than they did last year, but I think there's a renewed optimism with Rodgers there.
Yeah.
And I think it's slightly misplaced, yeah.
Especially after last season, if all you've got to bring back to the table is, I'm not saying Joe Allen's not a good footballer, but if all you've got to bring to the table is a Swansea midfielder after last season signing and a Blackpool midfielder,
I mean,
and
yeah,
you think you're Liverpool and you want to be really ideally competing for Champions League football.
They brought in Joe Allen and they're rumoured to be bringing in Sahin, who, you know, I'm not going to pretend I've got lots of personal experience watching, but if you read what anyone in Germany said about him season four last, he was a phenomenon. But they're all central midfielders, and to me, you know, Liverpool lack a wide man. You know, Bellamy's going back to Cardiff, Count's left. You know, Count's gone. Downing is just like,
I reckon Downing might have a can't have a worse season.
He can't obviously have a worse season.
I think he'd be alright. But I think there's a lot of weight would have been shed from his shoulders.
To me, I mean, I sort of disagree with that. I don't see him particularly doing anything. And it's all very well having perhaps Sahin,
Joe Allen up top as well. But again, not. It's just another Brendan Rodgers. He had him at Chelsea reserve, brought him over to Swansea. But it does.
Barini, what? Where's Suarez playing? Where's Carroll playing?
Carroll won't play.
You don't think Carroll will play? I mean, to me, you know, he played Danny Graham at Swansea, sort of a big man up front. I wouldn't be surprised if Carroll did play. I also think Carroll could actually prove a lot of people wrong next season if he's given opportunity.
Yeah, but I don't understand why Liverpool. Why I said he's going to leave is this all that talk that was surrounding him for so long about he was going to go. I don't know. I just don't think that talk fabricates out of nowhere.
No, I don't think Rodgers wants him, perhaps, but I don't understand why not. I don't understand necessarily what Barini brings that you couldn't get out of Andy Carroll if Andy Carroll gets back to the sort
Barini's
of form.
Very different. Barini's a short man.
I know he's not necessarily the same player, but, you know, is he a better player than Andy Carroll all round if Carroll gets back to the Newcastle form?
If you had Andy Carroll at that form that he was at Newcastle for that half season, albeit it was a short period of
but
time.
But do you think he looked more like he was getting back to that form at the end of last season?
Yeah, it did. And I would back Andy Carroll. I would.
To me, I mean, I don't want to sort of get stuck on Liverpool, but so to me, they've spent some money in the wrong positions, which I think is sort of a trend in the Premier League this season.
Yeah.
I just think Rodgers is too much away from Rodgers. I mean, especially if Agger leaves, which is the other Man City transfer we didn't really touch on. If Agger went there, I think they'd be in trouble. I don't know. I'm not saying they'll do worse than last year. I just mean that I can't see them doing necessarily any better. I don't see where they've improved, where other teams have.
Yeah.
How about you? First of all, don't listen to me. I mean, last year I said Newcastle would be the underachievers and tipped them to get relegated. So, I mean, that shows everything I know about foosball.
Speaking about Newcastle, I don't know. I've got no doubt in their quality. I'm not sure if this. I'm not sure if the momentum from last season, which was, I think, massively down to their performance, it was just pure momentum.
Yeah.
And once that ball got rolling, they had good players, but no one exceptional. Exceptional in the sense of absolutely phenomenal.
You wouldn't say Cisse.
He had a great half season.
See, there's a lot of of him getting found out now. Do you think that's perhaps the case?
I don't understand what they mean by found out, because...
Well, as in, you know, he was sort of like a new force halfway through the season.
Okay, defenders,
when they come to play him a second time round, will be more aware of his sort of movement, he plays.
I think that should be training. I don't think you can just do your own, tactical play and go into a game not actually knowing who you're playing against. I think they do. They must watch.
But if he comes... I think maybe the sort of opinion is you can train, you can watch videos, but until you actually play against someone... Until you play against them,
yeah, it does change. But Cisse could have just been on a super hot run of form.
Yeah, we don't know, do we? I mean, Barr certainly fell off as soon as Cisse joined. Whether that was him moving position or whether that was just
not saying they're bad footballers. I'm just saying if Newcastle start to lose or start to... You know, that confidence, if their chest starts to deflate, I could see them just sinking into what people were talking about once upon a time was a top four for Newcastle, sorry. Yeah. So just sitting in 10th or 8th.
So they're your underachievers for this season?
They're my potential underachievers. As speaking from a big fish, or Tottenham, obviously, if nothing happens, I can't see them.
Yeah.
I mean, if they don't sign anybody, they're in theory going to struggle.
But I think again, speaking of Newcastle, there's a lot of expectation now from their fans. That they think they are one of the biggest clubs in the league. Which, we took a fan base, fine, yeah, they are. They're a huge club with a lot of history. But they would do very well to achieve the same level again, wouldn't they, this season, as they did last season.
Oh, yeah, hugely.
So, yeah.
Don't forget, a couple of years ago, they were relegated.
Yeah, exactly.
Albeit with a team that shouldn't have been, but they were relegated. But yeah, do you think who's going to get relegated? Speaking of that, actually,
who's a relegation candidate this
candidates.
Season? I think my first one would have to be Wigan.
I was going to say that.
I mean, superb last season. What they did, how they managed to escape.
You can only hang on the ledge for so long.
Yeah, I think it's been every sort of, year what, three, every three year seasons in a row.
And these...
Yeah. So I think this might finally be the time they go down. I mean, I'm sure they'll maybe prove me wrong, but...
Yeah.
I was thinking of a few candidates. I think West Brom getting in Lukaku could be a huge boost to them. You know, obviously there's a lot of hype about him and we haven't really seen too much of him. But it shows intent and if he's that natural a goal scorer, then that could be invaluable down at the bottom. I think West Brom could be saved. And I know Steve Clark's been put in charge there and, it's sort of for a step up from assistant to a manager somewhere. And Roy Hodgson obviously did well there. But I think they could be okay. I think... Actually, Swansea.
Relegation
candidates. I mean, although, again, they had a great year, I think this year the sort of... It's the second season syndrome, isn't it? Could struggle. QPR, I think, have counteracted that. Not in a particularly clever way, I think, by going out and spending a lot of money on old players, which, fine, they might survive this season, 2 years' time when all those players who are 35 are on big wages.
Very short time.
It's a sort of Portsmouth view, if you took it like that. It could end up being disastrous. I hope not. I don't wish that upon any club. But I think they'll be safe this season. I think Swansea, though, could struggle, losing Joe Allen, losing Brendan Rodgers. As you're saying, a sort of confidence at Newcastle going, I mean, that could suck the confidence for you.
Yeah, and although Swansea, if you come up, they say, look, listen, guys, we're going to play our good football. And all well and good when it pays off, but they got spanked by Man City early doors.
Yeah.
If they had lost their next five games that badly, they'd have been like, listen, we have to adapt to survive. Yeah. So then you're playing a game that you're not comfortable with against players that are seemingly better than you.
Yeah. There's been a lot of talk. Loudrup's been brought in as manager. A lot of people who know a lot about football say, it's great for Swansea. And it could be, and he seems to have picked up a few bargains where a lot of people are saying there's not value in the market. You know, Meet you and that for like $4 million, I think, or something. But, yeah,
big business.
But I just think they could struggle, you know. I think it happens a lot with the promoted teams in their second season. And for me, that's the one, if you lose your manager and you lose your star player. And you, like, also they've lost Kulka as well, back to Spurs, because he was on loan. And I think he was superb for them last season.
It really was.
That was their sort of spine of the team, you know, well, Corker and Joe Allen.
Yeah,
it
was the two central midfielders and the two central defenders.
Yeah, so.
They just had everything locked down, and then you had the likes of Rangel supporting from the wide positions with like Nathan Dyer.
Yeah.
And Sinclair. Like, obviously, they're okay footballers.
Yeah.
You know, nothing that is going to send you crazy with pure imagination, but. Yeah, and Danny Graham, big man up front, does the job.
Yeah, but again, you know, maybe he dries up next season. So I think I'll tip them. And then I can't really pick between Reading and Southampton. I think one of the promoted clubs will go back down this year. Oddly, I can't see it being West Ham, because although they probably didn't do as well as people expected under Allardyce and with new signings last season, I mean, I do rate him. I think he is a good manager for the amount of shit that he gets. And he knows how to keep a club in the league, I think that's for sure. As you can see with that, what he had done with that Blackburn team, then someone else takes over and it just goes to utter shit.
Blackburn were big problems.
I think he'll be okay. I think West Ham will be okay. But I think Southampton and Reading, both vulnerable at the back, which isn't really like a good thing for a newly promoted side. Reading, especially, you know, McDermott's done a really good job there, and they did really well last season, but
it was a strong reliance from Reading, wasn't
it? A reliance on youth as well, and I think that could go one of two ways. It could go the Swansea way or the Norwich way last season, where it's like, you know, they play their football and it starts well and the confidence just grows and grows, or they take, you know, five heavy defeats early on and that's it and they're just fucked for the season. So I'll go with Reading. So Reading, Swansea, Wigan as my three relegation candidates.
I'd go.
And yours?
I share the same view on Wigan. I do believe that there's only a certain amount of time you can hang on. They're almost dancing with the devil. Almost selling their soul.
I mean, I think Martinez might have sold his soul
at the end of last season to pull out what he was pulling out. And, you know, Wigan have always been one of those sides that get those couple of signings. Roddy Ager the other season,
and Zogbia
left.
Yeah.
And Di Santo was okay last season, but there's nothing really there for me. It's the forever adding and continuous quality joining the Premier League.
Yeah.
I think Wigan to go down, I think Stoke are going to risk it. I genuinely do. Although they haven't changed much. They are a solid side. I just think their time may have come.
I mean, they've got a very, very hard start. I think they face, I mean, I don't know if I'm directly right on this, but I think they face maybe like United, Chelsea, Arsenal, City or some like sort of four of the top six teams within their first eight games.
A bad start for them.
You know, a tough start. That could put you on the back foot early.
It really could. And I think if whatever you're aiming for, it will set. I mean, if you're aiming for mid table, finishing around between 8th and 14th is okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a big swing. But if you're literally thinking, listen, we can't mentally afford to lose all of this. And if they lose all of the games against the bigger clubs, and then pick up two draws, a loss, another loss, and one win. You know, they're sitting on 5 points from 8 games.
Yeah.
That's beyond relegation status, you know. I think Stoke could go down. I don't know. I've just got a feeling it's going to be Stoke, Reading.
Stoke, Reading, Wigan.
Stoke, Reading and Wigan.
Okay. I think we're sort of dragging on a bit here. Should we just do very quickly, overachiever? For me, Everton. While Liverpool underachieve, I think Everton will finish above Liverpool this year. I think Naismith's a great signing from Moyes. Cahill, I think his time was up. I think they've done well to get rid of him. Well, not get rid of him, but you know, I mean, I think he lost his half yard of pace, which was what his game is all about. They've brought back in PNR. Hopefully they'll invest some of the money from Rodwell, who I think, you know, wasn't actually doing that much at Everton, was injured half the time anyway. I think 15 million, if Moyes gets to spend it, he'll do well. So they'll be my overachievers for this year. And I could see them pushing perhaps sort of 6th, 7th.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's nice and high. My overachiever is going to be Aston Villa.
Lambert there.
I do believe Lambert, especially off the back of, you know, if you're taking him from Alex McLeish, you know, it's really not big boots to fill. Really not big boots to fill there. But seeing as they finished 16th last season, that is...
Yeah, they could finish 10th and they've done phenomenally better.
And Aston Villa, in the past 10 seasons, have finished 16th 3 or 4 times. And the next season jumped straight up to mid-table.
Right.
Which is quite interesting. Like, you never imagine... You always just think of them as a...
Sort of when O'Neill was there.
They were pushing.
That was only maybe 3 seasons.
They finished 6th a couple of seasons in a row. And arguably could have got higher if it weren't for money, in fewer words.
Yeah. Because I think Lambert's a great manager. I mean,
they've got very good youth. Very good youth players. Yeah, or youth. Like, not even just youth. Young players. Let's just say young players.
Yeah, you look at Banana, really good central midfielder. Delph, if he actually pulls his finger out.
Mark Albrighton.
Albrighton, you know, he had a great season 2 years ago. And then last season, barely used. If he can get back to that sort of form.
McLeish special.
Yeah, scared of actually attacking.
And then you've got Darren Bent up front, Agbonlahor. If he fills into what he has shown he could have been.
Agbonlahor, even. Yeah. I mean, he's got pace and, you know, the clinical finishing to be a top striker, but it just lacks a little bit more. I mean, it'd be interesting to see how they're signing sort of better. They brought in, I think, 3 Dutch players.
Yeah.
They brought in Vlaanderen and 2 guys from Fenerbahce in. It'll be interesting. I know Shea Given came out and said, you know, prepared to get absolutely... Because they play West Ham first game of the season. And apparently he's told the new Dutch boys, prepared to get absolutely battered first game of the season. Because, you know, the Dutch league, perhaps they sort of play it around a bit more and are used to a slower build-up. And he's, like, prepared to just get absolutely peppered by long balls. You know, the Sam Allardyce special, some would call it. But it's true, you know, for a new player, for their first game in a new league, to just be put under that much pressure.
West Ham away.
Yeah.
It'll be an intimidating atmosphere.
It'll be very interesting.
You know, West Ham's fans are going to make it known that they're back.
Well, I think Lambert actually is, you know, a great tactician and utilises his squad to sort of the best of their abilities. I'd rate him as a better manager than Brendan Rodgers, although he probably gets less plaudits. So, yeah, I would agree. I think Villa will do well next season.
Like I was saying, they can't do worse. If they do worse, they're relegated. Yeah. And they're not a team that's 16th. They're not a 16th position club. So hopefully they can pull it out and show us what they've got.
Do we want to talk about the Community Shield?
Touch on it, because it was a decent game.
Yeah, it was a great game of football. A lot went on. I mean, Torres scored. I think he could have a really good season now. He's sort of their first striker.
He's their only... It was him and Sturridge. They're only 2 strikers now.
Yeah.
Which is odd.
Yeah, it was a great... It was an open game. Very much so. I mean, obviously Chelsea having a man sent off.
When Ivanovic was sent off, that did
that sort of swung it, didn't it? And then City just sort of...
They hit 3 in 13 minutes. I think it was really fast.
It was a great game. I mean, if that's what the season's going to be look like, then we've...
Oh, yeah, massively.
We've got an exciting season to look forward to.
Chelsea are looking okay, but they do need time to embed. Hazard looks good, but obviously we'll need...
Well, like we touched on earlier, I mean, they looked... Obviously, they lost a man. They went down, but then the fact that City sort of swarmed them, they looked just, like, fragile, didn't they?
Yeah, massively. But, to be fair, going up against 10 men against a Manchester City side, who looked just... Obviously, they were playing against 10 men, and Chelsea did have their own... One when it was level playing, but I don't know. Joe Hart wasn't in goal.
Yeah.
And the goal, Chelsea's goal, came from a spilt shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's little things like that probably wouldn't have happened, or you'd like to think it wouldn't have happened. If Joe Hart was in goal, safe hands, that is a shot. Stomp it out. I know you wanted to touch on Chelsea's middle. You say they're
So they did. They got swarmed after they sort of. They were just 10 men, so it's obviously hard to play against, especially Man City like that. But I think where they're lacking, and where I sort of tried to explain earlier, is they've spent a lot of money going forward, but they still don't seem to have a defensive midfielder. And it's all very well to sit with, you know, Hazard, Oscar, Lampard, Torres, Sturridge, Marin, Mata, but you know, Essien is not back to his best, and I can't see him really coming back. Mikel is, to me, just, you know, a waste of space and a waste of potential. And Romeo, I think, could be a good player, but is too young at this stage to really fulfil that role. And I think that's where they could struggle, and that's why I'm sort of, you know, although I think Man United could struggle, I still think they'll finish above Chelsea. I think if teams attack them, they could struggle, though they'll probably score a few. They're likely to concede a few.
Yeah.
And I think this is a trend, you know, me and you were talking about it. A trend going through the Premier League at the moment seems to just be like a lack of defensive midfielders. I know the game's changed. People aren't playing a 4-4-2. You don't necessarily need a Roy Keane or a Patrick Vieira enforcer in there. But there seems to be sort of a complete disregard for defence, you know, and the defensive side of midfield at the moment, and just such a focus on attack. And whether that's just because the best players at the moment all seem to be sort of attack-minded midfielders rather than
defensive. But the players defensive. Have always grabbed the plaudits, even from way back when.
Yeah, but there's always been the defensive midfielder there counteracting.
That was always the perfect formula.
Yeah, whereas now it doesn't seem that way. I mean, say Alex Song left, I know how we talked how he's not really a defensive midfielder anymore, he pushes on, but some would argue he was sort of the best tackler in that Arsenal midfield. And
he was. He made the best defensive midfielder. Tackles in the Champions League.
Yeah.
Which is a massive achievement, it's a massive stat. You know, if it's not like, okay, he did get forward with the ball and often went on a run, but he was in that role, but had a very liberal role.
You look at Man United now, and we said Cleverley and Carrick, you know, both great passers of the ball, very, you know, very good at picking the right pass to start off a move, but they're not defensive, you know. As I said to you, I mean, could you imagine Yaya Toure storming past them?
He'd walk through them.
I can't see either of them really putting in a challenge there. You know, and to me, I think that's where a few of these teams could fall down. I mean, it just seems to be a trend at the moment amongst the top teams in the league to really not focus on having a defensive midfielder. When you look at someone like Newcastle, how important Tiote was to them last season.
Is that arrogance? Is that arrogance from the bigger clubs?
I think it's just a case of, you know, it's all very well to look at Barcelona at the moment and go, oh, we want to play like them, and they don't really...
You can't do that.
But you can't do that. And I think it's a case of, honestly, they're just going out and spending money on big names. And they're all sort of taking the opinion, well, we'll just score one more goal than you. You know, which to me, defence is just as important as attack. It's fine if you win 1-0. If you're winning. You know what I mean?
I think it depends how you win 1-0.
I'm not saying they're going to go out.
Attack is the best form of defence. If you've got the ball and you're attacking, your opponent can't do it.
But I don't see how you can go through a season without a defensive midfielder. You look at how different Liverpool were with and without Lucas, and it's so easy to see how important he is.
There's no doubt that role is undervalued and, you know, underrepresented, really.
Tottenham, Scott Parker was Player of the Year last season, and a lot of talk amongst Spurs fans is how important a role Sandro's going to play this year. But to me, Arsenal, Man United, Chelsea, and to an extent Man City, but, you know, you could argue sort of Barry, Milner, but if they get rid of De Jong, them to a certain extent as well.
I mean, they can play Torre in a reserve.
Yeah.
But obviously that's not what you'd want, someone with that ability where you think he's best driving in.
I just find it quite an odd thing at the moment that seems to be the trend, a lack of defensive midfielder, when you only have to look back, what, 4 or 5 seasons, when the Makélélé role was all that anyone talked about.
Yeah, that was.
And Essien coming in was just like such a revelation, how good he was in that position.
Massive.
And so important to them, and it seems to just be disregarded at the moment. And I think although it'll make for a very exciting season,
if there's no defence, everyone just doesn't care.
Yeah, it could be very exciting, but I think in Europe it could see a lot of the English team struggle.
Well, yeah, because those attacking midfielders in the league are going to be able to run riot, because if you've got someone playing between the lines, if you want to put it like that, if they're playing in the Trequartista role, they're going to be sitting in, you know, as a 10, where they're going to sit just in behind the striker. And if you've got no one covering that, they're going to have a field day.
Yeah. I mean,
they're going to have an absolute field day.
The other thing to you could say about it is, you know, it's all very well having, you know, sort of six attacking players on, but then if a team decides to sit back against you, you're a bit fucked, really, because everyone just covers the same space. And sometimes you actually need a midfielder who's sitting deeper to, first of all, draw out the opposition and then be able to sort of orchestrate a move, pick a pass. And I just think it's a very odd trend how it sort of swung around that quickly from the focus on that Makalele role. Before that, you know, Vieira and Roy Keane were seen as like some of the best players in the league, which they were, but their importance to the team was never undervalued.
It was second to none.
Now it's
just the leaders.
It's just
they?
Like, sign as many strikers, sign as many attacking midfielders. It's all about, you know, someone playing in the Messi role and cutting inside from the wide, or someone playing in the Van der Vaart role and sitting off a striker. And it's, I just think there's a reliance on that, which could make for a very exciting season, but maybe tactically, if the team got it right against them, could quite easily sort of nullify the threat.
Massively. Well, we have rambled on.
Yeah, for quite a while,
for
actually.
For a massively long time. We've clearly got excited. We haven't done this for a while. You know how it is.
It's good to be back.
It's quite the opposite, you know, when you don't do something for a while and gone for over an hour. So, pats on the back.
Nice. We're back in the game.
Yeah, he's back in the game. We're definitely going to be back next week.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll have a much more formulated approach, obviously, tackling everything. We'll have more to talk about.
We'll try and,
definitively,
we'll try and
at least. We can say, we can talk about how everything started. We'll know much more regarding transfer window news in 7 days or even less.
Of course, yeah.
So,
I've been Tom Malone. You can follow me on Twitter at tbear995. We'd love to hear if anyone's, you know, got any questions or opinions, or, you know, just tell us how much you bloody love listening to us.
Or hate
talk
us.
Shit.
We don't really mind.
Yeah, we don't mind. This podcast should, if everything goes planned, be hosted from now on at Balotelli'sBarber.com and ThirdYellow.com. We're sort of going to give up the livefromyourlivingroom.com web address because it's a little bit long to type in.
Yeah.
But we're still obviously going to be podcasting under that
name.
We're
out there.
Santoro29.
That is me.
Twitter handle.
That is my handle.
For Daniele. I'd love to hear from you. If there's anything you want us to be discussing or anything you think we've been chatting absolute shit about, you know, Aston Villa doing well or Newcastle doing badly or Liverpool doing badly, let us know, because we'd love to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, we will be focusing a lot more, not just on the Premier League. We're going to be covering youth football. Me and Tom are going to be both going and having a big part in the Next Gen series.
Yeah.
That's actually already started. It started yesterday.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll be sort of blogging about that as well
We'll be covering
both those websites.
We'll be covering Arsenal, Tottenham and the latter stages. We'll be doing them more hands-on, but also keeping a very keen eye on everybody else, as well as your traditional European football.
Yeah. So, peace out, guys. Thanks for having us back. It's been good to be back.
It's been good to be back. We'll see you soon. Six-inch heels catcher. She's headed to the pyramid. She's working at the pyramid tonight. Working at the pyramid. See you later, guys.
Bye, guys.
Thanks for listening. Working at the pyramid tonight. Yeah, working at the pyramid.